Good evening. I'd like to call the April 20th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Would you please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call of members, please.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Thank you, Kathy. I would like to request an executive session this evening to deal with two items, real estate or negotiations and litigation. Shouldn't be too long. Public privilege of the floor. Are there any members of the public who'd like to speak? I have several people signed up. Kathy Schlatter first, and then Chris Sanchirico second.
Good evening. I'm Kathy Schlatter.
And I'm director of the Human Services Coalition. And as most of you know, a number of agencies that go through, that receive county-city funding, go through our organization during the budget process. So I just wanted you to know that we have started our process this year. We sent out our forms and our packets to agencies last week. And I thought this year it might be interesting, instead of waiting to the end and knowing how much everyone has on their plate and how much detail you're going to be dealing with this year, that might be a good idea if you heard from the agencies as we go along. So from now on through the fall, I've asked agencies to come and take advantage of the privilege of the floor. So there'll be one or two agencies coming twice a month to tell you about their agency, what they're seeing, and the clients they serve, and what's happening to the agencies financially. I know you know that during hard times like this, the departments and the agencies are frequently the first line of defense people have, so I thought you might find this interesting. So we're going to start tonight, and Chris Sanchirico is here from Catholic Charities to kind of begin the process. I hope this is helpful. If you have questions and we don't have time for them now, please feel free to get in touch with me. I'll get you any information as we go along that that you might need. So we'll just be talking. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Chris, and then the next is Bernie Hutchins.
Okay, so I drew the short straw. I go first. And actually, it's a great night to be here because I hear there's a resolution for immigration reform on the floor. Yay. So I'm going to read this. Thank you for your continued funding of our work at Catholic Charities. We appreciate your understanding of our mission to reduce poverty by building a caring community. We are committed to providing services to the most vulnerable, and we remain a resort of last resource for hundreds of county residents who must struggle to make ends meet. You fund two of our most important projects, the Samaritan Center and the Immigrant Services Program. The Samaritan Center provides short-term emergency financial assistance, personal care products, and free clothing to over 1,000 Tompkins County families each year. We also provide facilitated enrollment for food stamps and on-site enrollment for Child Health Plus, Family Health Plus. In the past year, the Samaritan Center has experienced an over 30% increase in requests for personal care products. In 2009, we provided assistance to over 1,300 families. In 2010, our clothing closet is averaging 100 new households each month. Short-term emergency assistance, not counting the homelessness prevention program, has increased 35% since last year, and food stamp eligibility screening has seen a staggering 111% increase over last year. Many of our new participants have not been in the system before and have many issues and challenges in addition to their presenting problem. They need guidance, reassurance, and often referrals to other services. Our Immigrant Services Program, created in 2006, provides in-depth case management to local immigrants, refugees, and their families. The case manager and clients work together as partners to navigate through the complicated array of human and government services in Tompkins County so that participants can live meaningful and productive lives as members of our community. In the course of developing our Immigrant Services Program, it has become clear that there's a gap in services in our community since low-income immigrants cannot afford the high costs of retaining immigration attorneys. We are presently working toward becoming accredited by the Board of Immigration Appeals so that our director can act as a legal advocate and offer skilled legal assistance to immigrants to keep families together, gain protection from persecution and domestic violence, attain residency and work authorization, and become naturalized as U.S. citizens. This would provide a unique service to our community that would greatly benefit the immigrants residing here. County funding for both of these programs is critical if we are continue to offer our essential services in this time of need. We are a very lean organization and are committed to controlling our expenses. We leverage county funding with volunteer labor and with grants and contracts that build on your support. In 2009, your $45,000 for the Samaritan Center helped to leverage over $70,000, including FEMA funding for emergency utility payments, Ithaca Urban Renewal Agency funds for security deposit, and a generous United Way grant for personal care products.
Chris,
grants
like
these rarely include funding for the staff needed to implement the programs. They provide funding that goes directly to people in need. Without county funding to maintain staff and infrastructure, all of the funds would have to be passed by. Just quickly, we had our funding cut between 2009 and 2010 by 15%, while service demands for services grew by 35%. We're being asked to cut even more mid-year from our contract. We're receiving 900 calls each month from county residents in crisis. We have new people coming in who came in through the homelessness prevention program and need ongoing support. This is not the time to cut services. We need your help. We need your support. Thank you again. I handed out newsletters to everybody so you can read a little bit more about us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. And if you have those remarks written, if you want to pass those up, that'll help. Kathy?
I do have them written, actually.
That'll help us get all the numbers right. Okay. Thank you very much, Chris. Bernie and Carlos Gutierrez.
Bernie Hutchins, 1016 Hanshaw Road. There's been some apparent astonishment on the part of the legislature with regard to the intensity of the uprising against the Hanshaw Road project. We can understand this in terms of a perfect storm, which here has five elements. The first element is the Cottington Road court decision that returned the power to the property owners. It told the county that they could not claim right-of-way based on sundry third-party documents. Rather, they had to show their own deeds or else rely solely on ownership by use. The impact of this decision has been understood, but apparently not implemented by the county. The second element was the change in the notification requirements of the eminent domain procedures law. The March 16th hearing had active participation and was memorable, but members of this legislature might be hard-pressed to recall the previous five such hearings. This is because they averaged only 30 seconds each. Nothing was said, and in consequence, the ability of the challenge a taking being limited to issues, facts, and objections presented at the hearing was zero. When we are notified, we show up. A third extremely important element is the fact that this project, in its oversized footprint, in its neglect of safety issues, and its inclusion of sidewalks, which, by the way, are the cause of the right-of-way problems, is extremely unattractive to the impacted residents. This has been true since 2005, although somewhat hidden from you by the staff. The neighborhood petition of 2005 was 94% against most aspects of the project. This petition to the town was claimed to be unavailable. I was able to get it from the Terwilliger of the town about an hour or so. The two town board meetings, one in 2005, 14 of 14 residents spoke against the project, as did 8 of 11 residents in the 2006 meeting. Incidentally, the 2006 meeting, the town infamously rescinded the privilege of the Hanshaw Road owners to decide the sidewalk issue themselves. That's not a good way to deal with residents. County's own 2007 final design report. You can look at it, you approved it, and 80% opposition to the sidewalks in the overall plan. Finally, there was the meeting of March 16th and the subsequent flood of written comments. I cannot emphasize enough that the overall unattractiveness of this project must be understood and addressed. Element number four is the importation of out-of-town consultants and the ham-fisted, although cordial, approach to the property owners. The one-offer system of negotiation that I mentioned at the last meeting here is typical of this abuse. Contrary to what Ms. Kiefer said, that wording is not standard under eminent domain law, nor is it in the NYSDOT manual. In fact, you can Google it. Google one-offer system in right-of-way, you get exactly five hits, the first one of which is the minutes of the meeting 2 weeks ago. So it shows a little bit about how common that is, not very. Element number five is our neighborhood. I'm proud of our neighbors, their character, their intelligence, their hard work, and their accomplishments. Like most Ithaca neighborhoods, we have professors, engineers, authors, private business owners, and many others of notable endeavor.
Mr. Hutchins, if you could wrap up.
I didn't see the... I'm almost done. Okay. They did not get where they are by not thinking for themselves. You sometimes ask our views pro forma, but our good faith responses are subsequently in one ear and out the other. You never kindle trust in the government, even at the local level. You never invite us to sit down and talk. But when we have the opportunity to speak and to act, we do and we will. And that explains March 16th. Thank you.
Thank you. And if you wanted to pass those comments up, that we could...
I'll email the file in.
Okay. Thank you very much. Carlos and Uta Ritz-Deutsch to follow.
Good afternoon. On behalf of the Latino Civic Association of Tompkins County and the Tompkins County Immigrant Rights Coalition, I'm here to thank all of you and also Kathy Luz Herrera and Les McBean for bringing today or presenting to the legislature a resolution on immigration reform. Prior to Senator Edward Kennedy's death, Senator Schumer committed himself to introduce an immigration reform bill to the U.S. Senate. I believe that May 1st is a reasonable deadline to do this. President Obama also promised during his presidential campaign a change for America. However, immigrants, and especially our Latino communities are being used as scapegoats for the economic health and immigration crisis that our nation is going through at this time. The first thing that we are facing is racial profiling. Our communities around the county are being terrorized by the immigration and customer enforcement bodies with massive roundups, detention and deportation at a rate of 1,000 people a day. This has resulted in the destruction of hundreds and not thousands of families. When children return home from school, they are finding that their parents have been detained. I cannot imagine how vulnerable and frightened they feel, and they don't know what's going to happen to them next. Our immigrant community is made up of hardworking people. They work doing the hardest job, are being underpaid, paid wages below minimum, no overtime pay, basically being exploited. We do not have to forget that when we sit at our tables every day for our meals, okay, we see all this delicious foods like tomatoes, apples, oranges, avocados, egg, milk, meats. Lots of them are, in the industry around us that are being processed by the very hands that today are being persecuted under cheap labor standards. It is time to put a stop to this tragedy created by repressive and ineffective immigration policies and practices. Please support this resolution and let Senator Schumer and Gillibrand, Representative Maurice Henchy and Michael Arcuri, and all of the other members of the Honorable New York State Congressional Delegation know that it's time to put a bill for comprehensive immigration reform to replace our ineffective enforcement-only policies, stop detention, and provide a way to for immigrants to obtain legal permanent status and citizenship. And lastly, you are all invited to a rally on May 1st at the Commons at 3:30 p.m. for in support of the immigrant passing comprehensive immigration reform. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Uta, hope I didn't butcher your name too badly.
Thank you so much for giving me these few minutes. My name is Uta Ritz-Deutsch. I'm also involved in the Tompkins County Immigrant Rights Coalition. I'm also the coordinator of the Ithaca chapter of Amnesty International. I'm a historian. I'm a local educator, and human rights is my area of expertise. I'm a historian of German history, of immigration studies, and there are a couple of things that come to mind looking at the system it currently is today. First of all, I think that this country is at a moment, at a watershed moment, and I think it's very important to take a stand when it comes to human rights and also when it comes to civil rights. As you might be aware, right now there was state legislation passed in Arizona that is the worst yet this country has seen, and it is basically a major violation of civil rights. It would basically compel law enforcement to ask quote-unquote suspicious people, meaning people of Latino descent, to provide immigration documentation, you know, to stop them routinely on the street, to ask for this documentation, and to detain them if they cannot provide it. So these are draconian measures, right? And this is a possibility. The country could be headed in that direction. And I think it's very important to take a stand to not let this happen, which means that all of us individually have to take a stand, have to be outspoken. And I think it's also very important that locally, whether or not it's the city of Ithaca or whether or not it's Tompkins County, it's very important that we take a stand and state very clearly where we come down on this issue. We simply cannot afford human rights violations or civil rights violations to continue. And this excuse that it is a matter of national security, as a historian, I tell you, I've heard these excuses before. And it is extremely dangerous to put some people into separate legal categories, right, and to basically deny them the rights that are guaranteed in the Bill of Rights for all people in this country, not just U.S. citizens. So I urge you personally to make a very strong and forceful stand when it comes to protecting the rights of immigrants, regardless of their status in this country, and also as a body here, the county legislature, to endorse the resolution supporting comprehensive immigration reform that has been introduced to this body and to pass it, and to send a strong and clear message to our state representatives and also to the president to do the right thing, not just by U.S. citizens, but by all peoples in this country, regardless of immigration status. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who'd like to address the legislature? Come to the mic and just state your name, please, and where you live.
Good evening. My name is Lori Konwinski, and I live at 302 Cascadilla Street in the city of Ithaca. I am the coordinator of Justice and Peace Ministry for Catholic Charities. It's an honor to be here tonight. I'm also a member of the Tompkins County Immigrant Rights Coalition. I would just add to my colleagues in their support, in their urging you to support the resolution tonight. This is also an economic issue for Tompkins County. It's obviously a moral issue, which is why the Catholic Church and so many other people of faith and people of good faith are involved in this struggle. This is a moral issue about human dignity and the treatment of people coming into our country looking for a better life. But it's also an economic issue. Something like 10 or 11% of our population here in Tompkins County has are immigrants. These are our people. These are our neighbors. And their labor is essential for our economy. We know in upstate New York, without the labor of immigrants, we would not have an agricultural sector. It's as simple as that. And many of the growers, around our Finger Lakes area would simply tell you that, that the current immigration system is destroying their ability to run their farms with because of the risk of their laborers, that their laborers are under. So as much as we want to emphasize human rights and human dignity, we also want to emphasize that the labor of immigrants is absolutely essential for our economy, our local economy, our New York State economy, our national economy. And that studies have shown us that if we were to legalize, bring into the legal fold the people who currently don't have documents, documented status, that would be a net gain for our GDP versus the tremendous amounts of money used in enforcement and detention and deportation, which is just such a horrible waste of money when so many of our brothers and sisters are hurting and there's so much need during this era of economic downturn. So I would urge you for all of those reasons to use your voice with our congressional delegation to say that this is a county, this is a county legislature, and this is a county population who are urging them to take a stand on this. It's long overdue, and we think that Senator Schumer really needs to hear from people that we want this to happen. The sooner the better for our families, for our workers, and for our economy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Our legislators, privilege of the floor. Anyone want to speak? Frank?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of items for you this evening. I wanted to bring to your attention the never-ending concern that some of us, myself included, have expressed about the NYSEG potential rate increases that they've asked for. We've written again to the Public Service Commission regarding the electric and gas proposed rate increases, and we have not received an answer. We have not received an answer over the last 3 years. If you recall, when we had the ice storm a number of years ago, part of the responsibility was to produce a report, and it was supposed to be self-policing before Iberdrola bought out New York State Electric and Gas. The report has not been done, and we're still hoping that it will be done. In that vein, there are several public hearings that are scheduled across the state with regard to these rate increases. The closest one to us, thanks to Karen and Martha for forwarding the information to me, the closest one to us is the 28th of April. It's a Wednesday evening. It'll be held in Binghamton. And I am going to do my best to try to get down there. I will not obviously speak for this legislature, but I certainly will speak as a legislator representing my district, because the concerns that some of us have had, we simply can't afford yet another set of rate increases, and we can't afford not to have that report that shows us how this company is going to do the maintenance on their own electric lines. It's been almost 4 years that we've been writing letters. We don't even get a response. That's one item. Secondly, just a reminder that Memorial Day is coming up. I brought to your attention at the last meeting that we're in the process now of, we have ordered the flags for the cemeteries. If any of you know of organizations in your communities or individuals that put flags out on the actual graves, that get them from the VFW, we buy them, give them to the VFW to distribute. We'd like to know what organizations you know of that actually put the flags on the graves. If you could let us know that, or let me know that, or Karen, I'd be appreciative. Third item, this is a real quickie. Yesterday, I know how interested you all are in the oil and gas and shale item. Yesterday at the Water Resources Council, we had a presentation by a gentleman from Pennsylvania who happens to live in Tioga County, New York, regarding the situation in PA. Carol was there, and Carol and I talked about the potential of having this gentleman come and give a similar presentation to this board, and we're going to hopefully try to work that out. It was very, very good. The information, we were appreciative of the information. I don't think we were happy with what we saw, but Last formal item, just a heads up, it doesn't affect us directly, but we all get blamed for this. The Ithaca City School budget is up for a vote on the 18th of May. With all of the outcry that people have had about restorations, the original proposal that the superintendent put forward was for an increase of slightly over 3% in the levy for the school district. With all of the outcry and the restorations that took place, the proposed increase is now over 4%. It's something like 4.5 to 4.75. The reason I wanted to bring this to your attention is every single one of us, when people get their school tax bills, get calls, even though we have nothing to do with the school tax. In addition to the May 18th vote, which will also address new individuals on the board, there's three openings. There are two propositions on the ballot. One is proposing a $5 million fund for capital improvement. The other is to add to the existing $300,000 that exists. My understanding is it's left over from the $90 million that was proposed and approved several years ago. Most people never look at the top of that voting at the ballot, and that's usually where the propositions are. The reason I wanted to bring this to your attention is the school district on May 18th will be using the old machines, not the new ones, even though they're going to be giving demonstrations at the various locations. They will be using the old lever machines. Therefore, the propositions will be at the top of the ballot where they always have been. And I wanted to give you a heads up on that. In case you're asked, it's less than a month away, and this is the Ithaca City School District now. I don't know about the other school districts. And just an aside, I want to bring to your attention, and I think you'll appreciate this, that our TV crew is attired in matching outfits. And although Jim is hiding in the back room, he too has jeans and a blue T-shirt on. So I wanted to ask if this was the official uniform that was supplied by Cooperative Extension, or was this just happenstance?
Is that a rhetorical question or an actual question?
If Jim pops out of there, maybe we'll get an answer. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Frank. Anyone else? Carol and Pam.
I'd like to reinforce Frank's request that Mike Lovegreen from Bradford County be able to come and address either this group as a whole in some way. We've heard theoreticals, from people concerned about Marcellus shale gas drilling. We've heard experience from different terrain. Mr. Lovegreen came and talked about specifics, numbers. He brought photos, experience with a very similar terrain type of experience to what we have here, with the Marcellus in particular, where they went from 68 well permits 1 year to 1,400 the next, and what it meant for them, and it would really be helpful for everybody to hear that. I also got a call this afternoon, Cornell University's discussion about what they might want to do as a university related to permitting leasing of Cornell lands continues. There will be a hearing of sorts at which people you had to submit in advance to speak. This is going to be this Thursday afternoon, April 22nd, in Call Auditorium, 4:30 to 6:30. And this is to comment on Cornell's process, but people it's an open meeting. People can come and listen. And I will be speaking there with my 3 to 4 minutes. If people here have points they'd in particular like me to make, come and see me after the meeting. Thanks.
Carol, I thought that was just for Cornell faculty, staff, and students.
I submitted a request to speak. You had to submit a request in advance. I submitted a request as a longtime former Cornell employee, a retiree, an alum, a resident of the district, a net representative of the district that includes the Cornell campus, and asked to speak. And I did hear today that I am on the approved list.
Well, that's great. I got the impression, strong impression, that mere alumni weren't invited, so I didn't even bother. Pam?
Yes, I just wanted to mention the what happened at DOT a week ago Monday when we went to a meeting of the task force that was set up by the governor, which included representatives from the industry and trucking industry and representatives from communities to talk about the proposed regulations. We had every expectation that the meeting would be another meeting in anticipation of implementing the regulations. We had no notice that anything different was going to happen. And in fact, DOT made it very clear at that meeting that they were no longer considering implementing the regulations that they and many people had spent 2.5 years working on, that many people who live in the area have been counting on something happening. And actually, about a month ago, we had received reassurance from DOT that, in fact, these regs are going to go in effect in this summer. So it was a bit of a shock, and I know that I spoke with Amanda Fellacy from Senator Schumer's office. Senator Schumer's been very involved in this, and they had no indication that this was going to happen. So it felt very much like somebody pulled the plug, and I think that that may be what happened. I don't know who pulled the plug. I don't know how it happened.
Oh, wow.
But tomorrow we are having a meeting of the Upstate Coalition to talk about what our next move is going to be. I think that people are not going to give up. But I think that it was a tremendous setback for us all. And I think the residents of the Finger Lakes region were the losers in that decision by DOT.
Thank you, Pam. Anyone else? Jim and then Dooley.
I received a card from all of you recently, and I just want to thank you for that. My family appreciates it very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Julie?
I missed hearing Mike Love Green at the WRC because I went up to Call Auditorium from 4:30 to 6:30 yesterday to hear James Hansen, and it was a real privilege to be in his presence. He gave a very calm, clear, gentle, and scary presentation in his gentlemanly way about how close we are to tipping points, after which the dynamics of climate will just not be reversible by human action. So it was very good to hear him in person. His book called Storms for My Grandchildren was on sale, and there were great crowds of people buying it and having him autograph it. But the thing he was unable to answer is what can ordinary people do who are concerned about this, because to the extent that policymakers seem unwilling to face up to this and continue business as usual, close to business as usual, we do not face a good future, let alone our grandchildren. So it was depressing but important to be there, and I hope that as individuals, we will feel as inspired about that as the speakers tonight did feel about immigration reform. If we don't have a planet that will let people inhabit it, it doesn't matter what kind of other reforms we have. What I really raised my hand about, though, was to say that it's time for legislators to turn in their financial disclosure forms, which are due by May 15th. It's after tax time when people have those records out in front of them, so I hope you all will get them in on time this year.
Thank you for the reminder, Dooley. And IDA members, that goes double. We send them into Ina Arthur. So, Mike?
Well, we still don't have a state budget. The counties, the cities, the towns, the villages, the school districts, and everybody else are on pins and needles to try to figure out what's going to happen to us this year, whether they're going to be draconian cuts, whether they're going to be new taxes, what's going to happen. We need to know. We needed to know by April 1st. We haven't heard that. Today's paper says they're fighting over whether they can come up with $1 billion for tax relief. Does that $1 billion we add to the $9 billion deficit that they have up there? Are we going to borrow another $1 billion for that? I think it's time that legislature completely changes. We've got to look at that. We've got to look at who we have put into the legislature. We need a constitutional convention. So that's one of my favorite hobbies, as you know. The other thing, I want to do a little commercial, and that is the Dryden Historical Society tomorrow night at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Village Hall. We'll have a presentation on the Southworth Library, one of the rural libraries, its connection with Abraham Lincoln, the manuscript that it sold about a year ago, the new addition to that library, which will be called the Lincoln Center. I'll be one of the presenters, along with the president of the library, Mary Ellen Rumsey, and Steve Hugo, the architect who's working on the project. So if you're intrigued about those kinds of things, please come out and join us.
Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? I have a couple things under this section of the meeting. Yesterday evening, I went to a small focus group about with the people working on the search for the Ithaca City School District superintendent. It was very helpful, very interesting. Susie Cook and Nancy Zook of our staff also participated. And there are a couple of additional meetings. I don't have the times, but I think at Caroline and Enfield Schools, and would encourage the public to take part in that. And I just wanted to remark tonight on the passing of Dorothy Height. She was 98. I want to thank Paula for sending me the New York Times quote. She was she died this morning, and New York Times wrote that she is widely credited as the first person in the modern civil rights era to treat the problems of equality for women and equality for African Americans as a seamless whole, merging concerns that had historically been largely separate. That the American social landscape looks as it does today owes in no small part to Ms. Height. Originally trained as a social worker, she was president of the National Council of Negro Women for 4 decades, from 1957 to 1997, overseeing a range of programs on issues like voting rights, poverty, and in later years, AIDS. And I would note that in one comment I heard on the radio, they pointed out she'd been an activist for these causes from the presidency of Franklin Roosevelt through the presidency of Barack Obama, and that's a pretty long time. That's quite an impact, and we'll miss her. So thank you, Paula, for helping me with that. So if there's nothing else, we have a special presentation from Bob Nicholas. I want to mention to the folks in the room who may be waiting about the immigration resolution. We have a number of things to go through. When we get to our resolutions, I will move that one up. Currently, it's almost the last thing on our agenda for tonight, but there will be a couple of items of business before we do get to that. Bob?
Can I...
Sure. Do what you need to do. Thank you. Welcome, Bob. How are you?
Wait a minute. I'm Bob Nicholas, the airport manager. This is my 22nd year as the airport manager of the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. I'm really very pleased to have the opportunity to talk about the airport tonight, and I hope you find this interesting and educational. If you have any questions, perhaps in the interest of time, you could wait until the end of the presentation. What I'm going to do is just give you a run through of pictures of the airport so you can become familiar with the buildings and how it's laid out, and then I'll talk about the operations of the airport and the finances and and passenger figures. This is a view of the runway from the south. We're looking there at runway 32. The road at the bottom of the picture is State Road 13, and at the top of the runway, atop of the picture, is Warren Road. The airport is situated partly in the village of Lansing and the towns of Lansing and Dryden. It occupies about 530 acres. Single runway, 6,601 feet by 150 feet, with a full parallel taxiway. For those that don't know how the runway is numbered, just you look at the direction it's pointing in this case, it's 320 degrees, you knock off the zero, and you get runway 32. We have something like 2.5 million square feet of asphalt, which becomes pretty interesting in the winter when we have a snowstorm. This slide shows an overhead of most of the buildings on the airport. I don't know whether this thing will work. No, it doesn't. To the left, the two parallel buildings are T-hangars. Above that is the E911 center. Going to the right is the CFR building. The two large hangars there are Teganic Aviation, and then behind them there's East Hill Flying Club, the fuel farm, two more sets of T-hangars, another maintenance hangar, and then over to the right of the picture, if you can see it, there's the air traffic control tower and the terminal building. This is an overhead of the terminal, showing short-term parking lot in front of the canopy there, and parking lots for rental cars, employees, and at the bottom of the picture there is the car wash and fueling facility for the rental car, the two rental car agencies we have. View of the terminal from the front, that's the central atrium, and we have four wings coming off of the central atrium, north, south, east, and west. This is the central atrium from inside. Terminal building is approximately 33,000 square feet in area. It houses three major airlines, of course, US Airways, Delta, and Continental. And we operate 14 flights a day to four major hub airports. From those four hub airports, you can access non-stop 200 domestic and international destinations. And that's pretty amazing service for a community of our size. That's from the looking from the atrium into the south wing, which is the ticketing area. That's the west wing, which is the baggage claim. And another picture of the west wing. Behind that community art display are the counters for Avis and Hertz and the ground transportation. We boast about our convenient parking, but that is in fact an advertising display.
That's not baggage claim.
What do you have to know to park in that?
This is a picture of the terminal ramp area. The white structure to the right of the picture is the passenger boarding bridge, and it looks like we may end up having to get another one of those in the next year or two. I think most of you are familiar with the CFR building. That building houses airport administration, our crash fire rescue unit, and the airport maintenance. Two sets of T-hangers. Each one of those buildings has 10 individual spaces for small private aircraft. They're shaped in the letter T, which is where you get the name T-hangers, and obviously the T is the perfect shape for an aircraft. Two more. The grey buildings are both T-hangers. They house six private aircraft. Those were the two that we acquired at the beginning of 2009. And the blue building is another maintenance hangar belonging to East Hill Flying Club. Two large hangars belonging to Taganic Aviation Corporation. Taganic Aviation handles all the private and corporate aircraft that come into the airport. They fuel private and the airline aircraft. They also do aircraft maintenance, avionics, but their main business is looking after aircraft belonging to corporations in and around New York City. And in addition to providing crews and catering and taking those people around wherever they would need to go, they also use those aircraft for private charter. East Hill Flying Club, which has been at the airport for a long, long time, they own eight small aircraft about that size. They have something like 200 members, and between them they bought those aircraft. When they want to use them as individuals, they pay an additional fee just to take them. In addition to some really first-class pilot instruction, they provide training for what they call young eagles, people under the age of 16. They provide free flights for those people to try and encourage them to become pilots. And there's a young eagles event on May the 15th if you would like to go. The other thing they do is, as a fundraiser, is to have fly-in breakfast twice a year. And the next one of those is on Father's Day, which is June the 20th. No commercial airport would be complete without an air traffic control tower. This one is actually run as a private contract, or a contract with the FAA. It's run by a company called Midwest ATC Service. The controllers who work for Midwest are obviously fully trained controllers, but that private contract, instead of the FAA running it, having a private contract running the tower, cuts the costs in half. And here's a picture of our friendly terminal tenants. For those of you that travel a lot, you'll know that there's a bonus in having friendly employees at an airport and short lines at check-in and security. And this is the county team. All those people in dark blue uniforms on the left, they're the ones that are responsible for plowing the 2.5 million square feet of asphalt, mowing hundreds of acres of grass, fixing the equipment, maintaining the airfield, and all the county airport buildings. In addition to all that, they're fully trained EMTs and aircraft firefighters. In terms of our operating certificate, we can't do without those people. You could do without me more than you can do without them.
Does that aircraft go with the chairman's appointment?
That's mine, actually, though. Oh. I'd like to take a pause for a commercial break and a message from one of our sponsors. Seriously, though, Senator Schumer has been tremendously helpful over the past year, particularly with Continental Airlines. We owe him a debt of gratitude. Now a little bit about the way the airport is governed. Obviously, it's owned by the County of Tompkins, was purchased by the county back in 1956 from Cornell. Our operating certificate is dependent on adhering to some very stringent FAA safety regulations, and of course we have to comply with the same stringent security regulations that apply to every airport in the country. In addition, we have certain New York State regulations to comply with as well, such as SECA. This is a bit of a dated photograph, since half the people aren't on the Air Service Board anymore. But they are a diverse group that represent the business community, Tompkins County government, the legislature, and the two biggest schools in the county, Cornell and Ithaca College. They were formed by the legislature in response to some real concerns about air service a few years back, when it looked like we might end up with no airlines. And they've played a tremendously important part in where we are today. A little bit about the airport budget. The annual budget is about $2.5 million. I apologize, you probably can't see it. Well, I can't see it anyway. We have about a $2.5 million a year budget, which principally comes, the revenues principally come from the airlines. But for members of the public that may not know, the airport has been completely self-sustained for over 20 years, both operationally and in terms of capital expenditures. We spend about, on average, about $1.5 million on capital projects and equipment, and that is not paid for in local taxes either. The capital projects and the equipment are paid for. We get federal grants, but that money comes from an 8% tax that is incorporated into your airline ticket when you buy one. So 95% of the costs of the capital projects come from the FAA. 2.5% comes from New York State sometimes. And the other 2.5% is folded into the airport budget and paid for by airline fees and fees from other airport tenants. For those that don't fly and don't think the airport does anything for them, they may be interested to know that the airport employs over 260 people. It generates almost $500,000 in sales tax every year. Between the county and the airport, the other airport tenants, we spend over $12 million in local goods and services, and the airport generates in excess of $35 million annually. Since we don't have an interstate highway and are known to be centrally isolated, the airport takes on that much more importance. I won't read that. It's a quote from Michael Stamm, who's the president of TCAD, the county's main development arm. He's also this year the chair of the Air Service Board. As you probably know, one of the first things businesses will ask before they locate into a community is, where is the nearest airport? And that becomes a vital factor in their decision about whether they will move there or not. And, you know, all the jobs that go with those new businesses would probably not exist without having our airport here. This is a graph of the annual employments. Like every other airport, we took a nosedive after 9/11. That lasted for 2 years. Began to rise after 2004. We had a little bit of a blip in 2006, but since the last 3 years, we've had a steady increase of passengers, so that in 2009 we reached 110,000 boardings, which was the third highest total in airport history, which, given the fact that we're in a deep recession, was pretty remarkable. And here's the reason. What I do on a monthly basis, I look at the four central New York airports and look at the 12 most popular destinations from Ithaca and check the fares from each of the four airports. This is one that I did on the 31st of March, and those numbers in red indicate the lowest airfare available from those four airports. So of the 12 that I checked, the lowest fare was available for nine of those destinations from Ithaca. And we are actually getting people from Syracuse coming down to Ithaca, if you can believe that. So just to emphasize again, we operate to four hub airports, and we have access to over 200 international and domestic airports from there. And I'd like to just finish with a quick discussion about the airport master plan. We're currently in the middle of a green master plan, or sustainable master plan is what it's officially called, and it will determine what we do at the airport for the next 20 years. It will factor sustainability into what we plan on doing and modifying and modify existing structure and equipment with an eye on reducing emissions and protecting the environment. We're also going to work with our airport tenants. It's actually the carbon footprint left by our tenants is much bigger than ours, so we're going to work with them to get buy-in to our sustainability goals. Ultimately, our goal is to continue to serve the community the best way we can, but it's very much of a symbiotic relationship. We'll strive to provide what the community wants so that people will continue to use the airport, but we need people to continue to use the airport so we can give them what they want. And with that, I don't know whether we have any time for questions, but...
Thank you, Bob. Any questions for Bob? Pat, Peter, Carol.
How are things looking with employment so far this year?
We had a blip in February we actually had a drop in employments in February of 2.6%, but we had 59 cancellations due to weather. So given that, they were good results. But we've had increases in January and March, so we're still going up.
Peter.
Something you said caught my attention, if I heard it right, and it was so surprising, I think probably I didn't hear it right, but I thought you said that the cost of operating the tower privately was half the cost of paying the FAA to do it.
That's correct.
Well, that's pretty shocking. I mean, there are a number of things one might attribute that to. One is you get what you pay for, that the FAA people are more trained, more people in the tower when it's necessary, they work shorter hours, something, I don't know what. And the other is that the federal government weighs 50 cents on the dollar. Could you comment on which of those happy...
I won't comment on the FAA because they have a lot of power over me. But what I will say is that the people that can do the control of the air traffic, the private contractor, they're all qualified. Many of them are ex-FAA controllers or ex-military controllers. They do an excellent job and are
much better liked than their FAA predecessors. But for people using the airport, they don't need to worry about whether it's safe or not. They do just as good a job, and some will say a better job than the FAA did.
And you have no idea as to why it is that the FAA charges twice what they do?
A lot of overheads, I don't know. I don't know. But that's factual, though.
Carol?
Yeah, thanks, Bob. You really do. You do an incredible job, and we must have won awards somewhere along the line for being one of the most beautiful airports and cleanest in the country. At least in my experience, that's true. One of the issues, and I can answer that as a question, have we ever been noticed for how beautiful we are? One issue for frequent travelers, you know, in addition to price and convenience, is sort of cancellations. What happens when flights are canceled, and how often are they canceled? So do you have figures for days that were closed due to weather or other measure of cancellation? And in that regard, have you ever thought about, is there anything that could be done to coordinate what happens when flights are canceled in terms of being able to send people to by airports and vice versa?
We tend to have the same, and you know, it is a complaint that there are cancellations, but we live in the Northeast. We live in bad weather for a lot of the time in the winter. We have checked. People complain, you know, my flight was cancelled. We check the statistics from Elmira, Syracuse, and Binghamton, and by and large, they are the same. It's just, that's just the nature of operating an aircraft or an airport in the Northeast in the winter.
Yeah, no, the issue is that if you live in a bigger area with a bigger airport, there are more flights if one is canceled to try to get rerouted.
Right.
So that's why I'm asking, is there anything, you know, maybe Elmira is open when we're closed or vice versa?
That's rarely the case. But the more air service we have, the more opportunities there are to get a flight somewhere else. And so we added last, actually on April the 6th, we added another flight to Detroit. So we have flights to Detroit, Philadelphia, as I said, LaGuardia, and Philadelphia. So if one is canceled because of, let's say, weather in Philadelphia, then there's a good chance you can get on a flight and go somewhere else. But if the weather is bad all over, then just about everything is usually canceled.
The award for cleanest, beautiful airport?
I've never actually seen them doing an award for that kind of thing, but I think you're right. We should get it.
Frank?
Thanks, Marty. Bob, just addressing Carol's question, I think right after we built the terminal, within a year or so, we did get recognized with some help from the Chamber of Commerce. And also the conference room up there. We worked with TC3 to get the that conference room established.
Yeah.
So I think you're on the right track, Carol.
We did get, you're right, actually, we got an architectural award in the early days. It's so long ago, I've forgotten about it, but we did get one, yeah.
It's not that long, Bob.
It is to me.
Mike, and did I see your hand, Jim?
No, you didn't.
Okay, Mike.
Bob, just wondered if we would expect any kind of a ripple effect from the troubles in Europe with the volcano. Does that delay our people flying out because of the cancellations or anything like that, or are most of ours domestic?
I'm sure there are people who have changed their plans. I know that the president of Ithaca College was supposed to come back on Sunday and is on a standby list to come back. The standby list is for Saturday, so he's delayed at least a week if there are no further delays beyond that. And I think someone said there were 40,000 Americans that were sitting at airports in the UK waiting to get back. I don't know, going the other way, I'm sure there are lots of people with their plans messed up.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Bob.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. I'm sure we'll see you soon, here or at the airport. Just two items on from my report, both related to gas drilling. On Friday was the first meeting of the TCOG Gas Drilling Task Force. Liz Thomas, who's vice chair of TCOG and on the town board in Ulysses, thought we ought to pull this together, and so we've been talking kind of around it for a while and did formally establish the task force that is, it's pretty mostly made up of municipal officials. There are going to be probably six committees and people from any group or just individuals will be invited to be part of the committees. We have those set up. I can let folks know about those, but it's a way to really coordinate the efforts that are going on, for example, on road ordinances. And Joe and Ed Marks were also there to talk about legislation, lobbying, to really, for each municipality to share information and not have to duplicate what each other's doing, because we have many of the same issues related to this industry. And next Wednesday, April 28th, and again on May 4th, I'll be traveling to Albany to meet with a few folks, including Pete Grannis on May 4th, Senator Antoine Thompson on April 28th. Thompson's the chair of the Environmental Conservation Committee in the Senate, and a few other senators. So we keep trying to carry the message. The yesterday there was another meeting, so many meetings in a week. Dusty Horwitt from the Environmental Working Group made several presentations, and yesterday afternoon's was for municipal officials. And some of the things he said suggested that we ought to start going to Washington. So we'll see. But anyway, that's what I'll be doing those 2 days coming up in the next couple of weeks. Administrator's report. Joe.
Thanks, Martha. I just have a couple of items on my list tonight. I'll try to go quickly through here. Budget updates. The retreat, just to remind you, the retreat is next Tuesday at 6 o'clock at TCAT, budget retreat. With respect to an update on some of the discussions that have been occurring about the budget and the budget process, after our last department head legislative retreat, it talked about a long-term financial projection and some different approaches to focus more on programs and the impact on programs of programs than perhaps we have before, and weave that into the budget process. After that retreat, there was an agreement that a work group would be put together to really flesh that out and make sure that it's something that we want to do, and if we do want to do, how should we do it? That work group consisted, I think, of 16 department heads and legislators, not a small group, and not a subdued group. We've had two lively meetings about the topic, and I think all of you got an email over the weekend that laid out the consensus that has been reached within that work group that really gives good guidance to a new element of the budget process. Again, focuses on programs, tries to provide a very good description of the programs that we provide and an impact that those programs have as well as their cost, and then integrates that into the decision-making process for the budget. So, again, I think we got very good guidance from the work group, and if we didn't get it out today, we will get it out tomorrow, the forms that will be used by departments to begin inputting information about programs will be out there, and that process will get underway very quickly. Again, I think this is a very positive development that will really inform the budget process in a year where it will be very important to make hard, high-quality decisions. The group will get together again, I think, for one wrap-up meeting. We'll try to get that together in the next week or so. To update you on, I'm not sure, Frank, if you're going to talk about the health or Leslin, the health commissioner search. Search committee has met now twice, including a meeting today. That process is well underway. beginning with, I think it was 35 applicants for the position, and we are whittling that list down. I believe that we have six that we've identified that we would like to interview for the position. The goal is to do that in the next couple of weeks and be done with the interviews, at least this round of it, by May 6th. Two other searches are in the earlier stages of their development. The Youth Services Director position, Nancy Zaylor's spot, as you know, she plans to retire in October. A civil service test had to be given for that. The results of that will be canvassed to determine a list of people that we can talk to based on their performance on the test. So that will get going fairly soon. And the search committee will come together pretty quickly to begin discussing the supervising attorney in the assigned counsel program. So those will begin to pick up speed very shortly. Very quickly, on Leandra's Law, I'm not sure that's in everyone's vocabulary yet. It's a new law that was put into place after a catastrophic accident in downstate a year or two ago that requires anyone convicted of a felony or misdemeanor DWI case has to install a locking device on their ignition to their vehicles, any vehicles that they own or operate. There has been great concern by counties about what happens if somebody can't afford to pay for that. And there are provisions in the law that recognize that some people won't be able to afford that $1,200 a year cost to provide this interlocking device. Pat Bushell, Julie Hughes, and myself were on a webinar yesterday. I love that word. With the State Commissioner of Probation, and I think a lot of our worst concerns, our most severe concerns, have been addressed. It sure looks, and the representation was by New York State, the counties will not be held responsible for the cost of providing these devices for folks who can't afford it. That will be a state obligation. There were some other good messages about the easing the administrative burden of this, so I took that as good news, and we'll save the nuts and bolts of this for public safety at the next meeting. Last, I don't have progress to report on the Health Benefits Consortium. Last time I came to this meeting, I rushed in from Albany. We were hoping to see some movement over a two-week period between now and then. And frankly, we are basically today where we were 2 weeks ago. There are still issues about the adequacy of the reserves of this and how to fund those reserves, and also labor representation. So we basically have not seen progress over the last 2 weeks on those fronts. I can assure you, however, we sure are trying. And hopefully the next time we come together, we'll have something to report on that. That's my report.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions? All right, County Attorney.
As the chair mentioned, I asked for a brief executive session after the meeting to discuss the litigation. I do also want to make a brief comment on more of an explanation on what Mr. Hutchins was talking about on the privilege of the floor, and actually more agreeing with him than disagreeing with him, but I think needs a little bit of explanation. As he pointed out, for many years the county held eminent domain proceedings on road takings, and no one ever showed up, and that was pretty typical. And then a few years back, New York State changed the eminent domain procedures law, which made two major changes. One is, instead of just publishing that you're having the meeting in a paper, you had to actually serve each resident who might be affected by it alongside of the road. So in this case, for example, we did maybe 80 services of persons. And also it says that you must warn these people, and it actually has the wording that you must put in the letter that you give to them, in the notice that you give to them, but it essentially warns them, and it says specifically that if they don't come to the hearing and raise objections, then they will lose that power to raise objections in any future eminent domain proceeding. And it does actually sound a little threatening, but the wording is actually required by the state law, and you must serve them individually. So, as Mr. Hutchins points out, this is likely to have an effect of bringing more people out to the meeting, and that's sort of an obvious effect of that. So meetings of this sort of thing will no longer be, I think, where nobody will show up, but much more likely people will show up. But then there's also sort of a personal observation, is that given the nature of that, that the crowd you will get and the people who show up don't necessarily represent a broad spectrum of viewpoint in the community, but rather those who have been served individually who are along the road, who are told that if they don't show up and raise objections, then they'll lose the legal right. So he's largely correct, but it is important to understand that because of changes in the law, in the future, we're likely to get many more people at these hearings, and they're likely to have more negative views because they're the ones who are required by law to show up. And that's my report. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Peter.
Jonathan, it's the first I've heard of that, and I wonder what legal right does a person have to object to a taking by eminent domain?
That's a good question. The eminent domain proceeding is actually a two-part proceeding. And one part is just whether the municipality has acted correctly, and then a totally separate part is money. The only real objections you can raise in the first part are two. One, there's some procedural error, and the main thing is that it's not for a public purpose. Most lawsuits and litigation have focused on whether it's for a public purpose. With regard to extending a road or stuff, the New York Court of Appeals has clearly held that's a public purpose. So in a case like this, the only real objection that somebody could raise is a procedural one. Then, of course, as a second part, they could raise the issue of whether the amount that they are paid is fair, whether that's fair compensation. But interestingly, because it's a second part, that doesn't stop or delay the project. Because the title, if you get through the first part, would then go into the name of the municipality, or the, in this case, the county, and then later they can, you know, residents could challenge the amount. So the first part can delay you. The second part really can't delay you. It's just a matter of money.
With regard to the second part, are there punitive damages awarded and things like that? I mean, the reason I ask the question is that, as I understand it, the amounts of money involved in these takings are modest. They're in the range of $500 to $2,000 or something like that.
Right.
So it's hard to make a lot of money suing for $2,000.
No, you're exactly right. There are no punitive damages. In fact, as a matter of law, you can't get punitive damages against the county, period. But what the county is required to do is have one or more appraisals, and it is required to pay the amount of the highest appraisal. So it does that. And then, of course, to challenge that, a person would need really basically to get their own appraisal, which, as you know, is expensive, and then to go to court, which is also expensive. So as a practical matter, it would be very expensive for a resident to challenge that, and the likelihood that they could make more than enough to cover their cost is not very great. Now, if there's a taking for a building or something like that, maybe, yeah. But for a strip of road, usually not.
Okay, thank you.
John, I have a question. This issue about if you don't raise an objection during this hearing, you lose your legal right to do that later. What is that a change in the law?
It is. And it's also that you have to put it in the notice, too. Right. Both of those are changes in the law. Okay. And of course, most people don't really understand what things they can raise and what are not. It just raises concerns by people, which I think, you know, if you were to get such a notice, it would raise concerns as right. to, and you think that you probably should show up and say something. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you, Jonathan. David Squires, Finance Director.
Just briefly, I passed out before the meeting the sales tax information for the first quarter. And I do have, it is positive in the sense that we have now, we're ahead of, we've actually credited to the budget more money for the first 3 months this year than we did last year by about 1.5%. The reason for that is primarily because of the allocation of the activity within the city of Ithaca was substantially greater than outside the city. The report shows that actually the city for the first quarter is up by almost 10%. Towns and township sales tax is down by about 5%, and the county ends up with the amount we keep for our budget up by 1%. Strangely enough, the amount the state sent to us for the quarter, which was reported in the wire service, was actually down by about $10,000. But because of the disparity in the growth from one area to another, completely offset that, and we ended up with about $100,000 increase. Increase over. And in the report, I point out that for budgetary purposes, we're about $100,000 after the first quarter below budget, because we presumed an estimate of in excess of 3% for the year, and we're only up 1.5%. But it could be, if we'd been flat, we'd have been down $200,000. So that's the positive spin on this.
Could have been worse.
Thank you, David. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Question.
Oh, Will.
David, is there any sense of why the variations around the state and the counties? I mean, I saw the news reports. You know, some counties are actually up and whatever. Do we have any understanding why some areas seem to be doing better?
Well, there was Chemung County was up substantially, and there was a unique circumstance there. And actually, there may be a unique circumstance in our. We haven't gotten the details, but there could have been a substantial prior period adjustment, which distorts the quarter. So what happens is, at the end of every 6 months, the state gives you some updated information saying the money we gave you was X, and after we processed the returns, you were entitled to Y. And sometimes, and historically, the county has always been just a step ahead. We get more money distributed to us than the reconciliation says we're entitled to, pretty consistently. And I suspect that because of the Y disparity, that there was probably an adjustment within the city which affected them only. And because the city preempts sales tax within the city for 3%, we don't share the dollars we get from the 3% tax within the city, because we only get 1.5% tax. It's all ours, so it's not diluted by sharing. So that's why this distortion, when there's greater disparity between one jurisdiction and another, it has these wild swings among the municipalities.
And this is why David often says, please don't look too closely at the monthly or quarterly reports.
But you know, you always have to be glad that when it benefits us, and like this increase, because we were looking at a $10,000 decrease for the quarter based upon what they sent to us.
Okay. Thank you very much, David. Cheryl, we have in our packets for tonight, a report from the sustainability team. Cheryl Nelson, Public Works Coordinator, is responsible for this, and we'd love to. It's a great piece of documenting several years of work, and Cheryl's going to give us a little update on it.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you tonight and update you on the outstanding work being done by the county sustainability team. The charge that created this team states that the report is to be given to the legislature annually by Earth Day, and since Earth Day is Thursday, I guess I got here just about in time. As a reminder for veteran legislators and as information for the newbies, our team has been in business for several years now. It is comprised of county employees who took on the task of being a team member on top of their already full workloads. Neither additional funds nor personnel were committed for this purpose. Instead of being seen as something added to doing business, sustainable practices and products are now seen as a regular part of doing business here. I am honored to have served as chair of this team since its inception. Each year, the team develops its goals and objectives. And a copy of the 2009 accomplishments and 2010 goals is available for all of you, and I hope you take time to read it. However, there are some items that are both new and ongoing, and they need and they're particularly noteworthy, and I'd like to highlight those. They fall in sort of three main categories. The first category is environmentally preferred procurement. This has been a particularly active and interesting topic area. Probably the largest single improvement made by Tompkins County in this area is changing to purchasing copy paper that is 30, 50, or 100% recycled content.
Purchasing virgin content paper is no longer an option unless it is by special request for a special purpose and it is proven that the recycled content paper would not serve the need. Through assistance from the Solid Waste Management Division, all county departments were given samples of preferred products to test and asked to provide feedback on their use. Lisa J. Hu, the county single purchasing agent, is ever vigilant in seeking preferred products and communicating with departments, reminding them of greener options. The first Green Vendor Fair, sponsored by the county's EPP subcommittee, was held in October and was a rousing success. A diverse vendor group drew a steady stream of county employees and others to the fair. It is something that may be considered again in the future. Nicole Stump chairs this team and does a yeoman's job challenging all to expand the use of environmentally friendly products. Nicole was here earlier. She was sitting in the back. She had to leave. The Finger Lakes Environmentally Preferred Procurement Consortium, or FLEFIC, continues to reach out to municipal and community members to find ways to purchase friendlier products at a lower price and overcome hurdles that impede the joint purchasing process. This group, chaired by Kat McCarthy, networks with consortiums and continues to research information as applicable and beneficial to the group's mission. A logo has recently been approved to help depict the group's mission and purpose. The Environmentally Preferred Procurement Resource Guide is a source of information on environmentally preferred products, and this guide is shared across the community and is available electronically. Lisa J. Hugh in County Purchasing has been recognized by the State Electronic Challenge for Environmental Accomplishments in Purchasing during 2009. Second category receiving a lot of focus has been in greening the fleets. The county green fleet policy was developed by a team of department stakeholders and approved by the legislature last fall. This policy was shared with the City of Ithaca and referenced as a model they used in developing their own policy. The Alternative Fuels Consortium came together initially for the purpose of getting biodiesel available for use in municipal and public fleets in the county. It was indeed successful in getting biodiesel here in April of last year. The consortium opted to continue to collaboratively discuss and evaluate alternative fuels such as compressed natural gas, propane, and electric applications. Vendors are invited in to give presentations on items of interest. This has proven to be a very valuable and efficient way of networking and researching information. Tompkins County became a member of the Clean Cities Coalition. This organization and its Central New York coordinator, Barry Carr, have been great sources of information on grant opportunities, alternative fuels, and opportunities for networking. Reducing greenhouse gas emissions and making county-owned facilities more sustainable and efficient has been a focus area for many years and is a third category of interest. The Health Department's new home at 55 Brown Road is the county's first LEED certified building project. Silver status seems achievable. Move-in is projected for late June. The administrative policy entitled Facilities Management and Workplace Environment that you recently approved addresses many items including thermostat settings, energy reductions, and use of appliances in county buildings. County-owned and maintained facilities are cleaned with environmentally preferred products. Barbara O'Brien, a cleaning supervisor, has been and continues to be a leader in researching and testing products and equipment to find ones that work most effectively and efficiently. Every county department has gone through a waste assessment thanks to the solid waste management staff. Alternative ways of reducing waste, including increasing recycling, rebuying, and composting, have been implemented. Each department has a waste reduction representative who serves as the point of contact for all things related to reducing waste. This also includes a listserv where departments advertise unwanted items to other departments at no cost. A true win-win situation that helps to save tax dollars. And as you heard tonight, our own Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport is the first airport in the country to get FAA approval to develop a green 20-year master plan. This truly is setting the benchmark for all other airports and for future planning. This process is being aided with the involvement of an advisory board comprised of many local sustainability veterans. Tompkins County entered into an energy performance contract with Johnson Controls a few years ago. This involved a process of auditing county-owned buildings and developing a list of energy-related improvements needed and the associated payback for each. This information serves as a planning tool for scheduling energy modifications to county buildings. Annual reports show that results are slightly exceeding expectations. Arel Lamaro, Facilities Director, is responsible for the oversight of this program. For 2010 and beyond, these goals will continue to be monitored and improved upon, as well as other initiatives being undertaken when identified to keep the county organization leading the way and moving positively and responsibly into the future. Ongoing employee education and communication, coupled with seeking green alternative products at prices that budgets can bear in this economic time, are challenges with which we will continue to grapple. Although appealing and applicable, some alternative products come with higher price tags. Through our consortiums, we will try to create a larger demand to help reduce pricing so these products are the more attractive and affordable alternative. In March, I was asked to present information to the county on the county sustainability program to SEEM, the Sustainable Enterprise and Entrepreneur Network. I received many comments on the good work being done and that we needed to promote into the residents across the county. Many in attendance at that event are seasoned sustainability veterans and were surprised to learn about how many successes we've had here. I will be working with Marshall Lynch to help spread the word far and wide to the residents of the county. As my employment with Tompkins County comes to a close and I move into the retirement phase of my life, I have faith that members of the next generation like Kat McCarthy and Nicole Stump, both employees in Solid Waste Division, will carry on with the visions and missions for a sustainable future. My hope is that everyone who lives in or travels to Tompkins County does their share to protect and improve this area we call home, so it can be enjoyed by this and many generations yet to come. I have no doubt that Tompkins County will continue to be seen as a leader and set high standards for others to emulate. Although it may seem cliche, the slogan of think globally but act locally seems applicable and appropriate to summarize our actions. On behalf of the Tompkins County Sustainability Team and me, thank you for this opportunity to share our team's successes with you. As a Tompkins County resident and taxpayer, I am appreciative of this team and their efforts, and I hope that you are too. We look forward to your continued support of sustainability and the team's missions, and we'll be back same time next year. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. And I just want to point out, you're retiring full-time, but you will be remaining involved.
Yeah, I just can't give it up. You know, after 35 years, it's hard not to get up and just come here in the morning. So.
Well, and we appreciate that. That's great. Are there any questions? Thank you so much, Cheryl. Appreciate it. All right, do we have resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Frank Proto.
Thanks,
Madam
Chair. A few resolutions I'd like to add under member file. Resolution M, as in Mary, in opposition to New York State proposed legislation S-7000A and Assembly 10372, amending New York State insurance and public health law, and I so move.
Is there a second? Thank you, Dooley. This requires 10 votes to add to our agenda. All in favor of adding this to the agenda, please raise your hand. They're in your packet if you're looking at me with a puzzled look.
In your red.
Any opposed? In your red folder. All right, that's on the agenda. Thank you. Next one.
Resolution N is in Nancy. In opposition to Article 6, Health and Mental Health Bill, Section 43 of the proposed 2010-2011 Governor's Budget, and I so move.
Is there a second for that one? Will seconds. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Can I ask a question first?
Sure.
Can I ask why these are being added?
I can add.
Go ahead, Frank.
They didn't hit the committee agenda in time to be voted on at the committee because the legislative agenda had already gone out. So I had to add them as a member filed resolution, even though the committee reviewed the intent of both of them and was supportive of both of them.
HHS meets the day after the...
And the timing is such that they can't wait till our next meeting?
Correct.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Adding to the agenda, right?
On adding it to the agenda. That's right. Any opposed? Thank you. And Frank, if you want to bring those up during your report, that would be great. all right. So to go to the consent agenda, these resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group. Unless any of you wishes to request that a resolution or appointment be withdrawn and discussed separately. So I will read the titles of the resolutions under the agenda. One appointment, Brian Eden to the EMC. Resolution A. Resolution B. Funding of Spring 2010 Tourism Marketing and Advertising Grants. Resolution C, revised, is in your packet, funding of Spring 2010 Tourism Project Grants. Resolution D, funding of Spring 2010 Community Celebrations Grants. Resolution E, authorization to contract with Tompkins County Area Development for 2010 Tourism Capital Grants Program. And Resolution F, award of Spring 2010 Tourism Capital Grants. Okay, so all in, is there a motion for the consent agenda? Moved by Carol, seconded by Frank. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That passes unanimously. All right, as I said earlier, I would like to ask that Resolution L revised, which is also in your red folder, be brought forth if at this time for the convenience of the public. So, Leslie, you want to go with that?
Sure. Thank you for your indulgence in moving it up. I'd like to Resolution L, resolution urging, and it's the revised version, which you all should have in your folder, resolution urging the U.S. Congress to enact comprehensive immigration reform.
And moved by Leslie, seconded by Kathy. Who would like to start? Leslie, do you want to give
a background? Sure. I just want to add just a little bit. While I do appreciate people taking the time to read and offer their comments and suggestions for some wording changes so that we can have something that is a lot more inclusive. So I really do appreciate that. And for those of you who I did not have the opportunity to talk to, that as a member filed resolution, please accept my sincerest apologies. It was not intentional by any means. That's not how I operate. I do want to say that this resolution is coming to you at this point in as a member filed resolution because there is some urgency. This is really a there's a movement. There's a growing movement in this country. Our time frame is getting pretty short, and we're looking to make sure that our voices are heard as well. As I was considering thinking of putting the language together, I began to focus on some of the things that we're doing in our outreach for the census and some of the concerns that people have been expressing just around that. And so I started thinking, we have been spending a lot of time through our census committee and through our own work, really encouraging and in some respects begging and cajoling, reminding all our residents to fill out their census forms because it's important. It's important that we reach that threshold number that we want to reach that dictates in some respects some of the funding that we get here as a county. In this resolution, it points out from our 2000 census how many of those residents that were counted in our 96,000, we're just below that 100,000 mark, were immigrants, over 10,000. That's a very important number. We're trying to reach our 100,000 threshold. And to achieve that, we're not going to be able to do that if our immigrants are not counted. And I just found the two things to just go just hand in hand. And so I think it's important that as a body, we let those folks who we are asking to make sure their forms go back, although there's fear for many of them in doing so, so that our numbers are there, the number we want to achieve, that it's important that we also reach out to them and let them know through this resolution that essentially we got your back. And we're hoping that our Congress will enact the comprehensive immigration reform bill. It's being, we're still hoping that it will reach the floor of the Senate. We know that our own Representative Charles Schumer has indicated that he will. And I know that I read somewhere that Minority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada also made public statements that he too will be fully supportive of either bringing this forward to the Senate floor or supporting it when it is brought forward. That is important. More than 10% of our population in this county are immigrants. I probably can speak for myself that say I'm probably the only person who's sitting around this table that is a naturalized citizen. Had my green card and then had to wait my number of years, and that is a place, this is a place where I'm very passionate about because I know some of the things that have been happening for so many people in our community, even as recently as last week that I can count, because of her immigration laws, and so I feel very strongly about this and wanted to be on record as being a part of a body that believes and supports the dignity of our residents, and especially those right now who are facing some anguishing times with the current immigration laws. And so I appreciate you allowing me to bring this forward as a member filed resolution, not just me, but Kathy and I, as a member filed a resolution, and appreciate your indulgence in not being able to touch base with a lot of you around it. Immigration reform, there's no, if you've been following the news, there is a lot of economic benefits to our state and to this country as a whole because of the presence of immigrants. You know, we don't do government based on just our personal stories, but our personal stories is what make us effective representatives sometimes. And I know that my own story of coming here as an immigrant and working as hard as I did to prove that I deserve to be here, not relying on government services and doing the things until such time as I really had to, but doing the things that I needed to contribute effectively to the economy, to the social well-being, to the morale of this country matters. Just some quick numbers from our Immigration Policy Center. New York's immigrants are responsible for $229 billion in economic output in New York, in New York State. The state would lose $28.7 billion in economic activity if all the unauthorized immigrants were removed from New York in 2008. That's how much we will lose in economic activity, $12.7 billion in gross state product, and approximately 137 plus jobs. The purchasing power, this is 2009, purchasing power of New York's Latinos totaled $76 billion. That's an increase of 223% since 1990. Asian buying power totaled $50.6 billion. New York's 145,108 Asian-owned businesses had sales and receipts of, David just talking about her sales tax, $30.4 billion and employed 164,000+ people in 2002. There are a lot more statistics, and as a college community, a higher education community, I thought that this statistic was important. New York's 74,934 foreign students contributed $2.2 billion to the state's economy in tuition, fees, and living expenses for the 2008-2009 academic year. Part of this resolution, these are just some statistics I want to share with you. Part of this resolution also mirrors some of the language that is in an act that is being considered as well, that was introduced in February of 2009 by Representative Gerald Nadler of New York and Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont. And this is the United American Families Act that is being considered as well. That act primarily speaks to changing language in it that references permanent partners, I'm trying to find my notes right now, wherever spouses, so that we can also provide a protection of comprehensive immigration reform for those members or residents of our community who identify as LGBT members. And so it's really important. We are trying here as a county to say we're not supporting tearing families apart. I don't want anybody to believe that this bill is by any means going to allow for people who are engaging in behaviors that are not good for our country and for our citizens to just remain here. This bill has a lot of protections in it that says, you know, you get background checks, any number of things, and if you're engaging in behaviors that are questionable to the point that it can interfere with national security, that those things are going to be considered. But this is, it's hard for me to even get through this just thinking of some of the experiences that I've had to deal with over the last couple of months regarding immigration reform. It is not easy. You know, I think every day about what I'm doing next, and although I think I'm doing the right thing, is it really the right thing, and when might it be me? So I feel very passionate about this. I know there are concerns about what process this has come through or not come through, but I hope that my colleagues around this floor can hear the passion, the concern, the plea from not just me, but from the hundreds of people or thousands of people who live in your districts as immigrants, who are asking for your voice in sending a message to the Congress that this needs to happen and happen soon. So thank you for allowing me to talk that long.
Thank you, Leslyn. Anyone else? Mike, and then Dooley, and then Carol.
I agree that we need immigration reform. I don't know what we're asking for in this resolution. I don't know what bills in Congress this is supporting. I'm very concerned about the process here, that it has not gone through a committee. I certainly support the idea behind this and the people. And I agree with you, everything you say, Leslyn. The immigration is the backbone of our country. My relatives were immigrants. Everybody's here came over on some transport. Mine came in the potato famine in the 1840s. Other people have come over more recently, and that's all right. But we also need to work with our colleagues here, and I think that some of the issues here could have been better resolved if this had gone through a committee, had been offered to a committee, and I think that that's what we should be doing here. And at this point, not that I'm against the sentiment here at all, but I think we should move to send it to a committee, because it hasn't been through a committee. It could go through your committee, your workforce committee. It could go through human services, whatever the chair feels is the appropriate committee. And I hate saying this, but I just think the process is pretty important. And these kind of resolutions, we'll see them from time to time. I'm not against those kind of resolutions overall, but I think we ought to go through the process. So I'm going to make a motion to refer this to committee.
Is there a second to that motion? Frank seconds. So the discussion is whether to whether to refer this to a committee, and if this passes, I'll address which committee. Kathy.
Thank you, Martha. I'd just like to say to my colleagues, if your decision to send this back to committee has anything to do with antipathy toward me personally because of stances I've taken, very consistent stances with regard to process, I can read that, and I can understand that as a purely hardball political tactic. I'd like to ask some of you to step outside the political payback that you might be tempted to indulge in right now, and hear Leslyn for the passion and the personal experience that she brought to this. It would be wonderful if immigrants in our committee, in our community, many of whom are naturalized citizens and who vote and who turned out in force for Barack Obama, who turned out in force to vote in this last election, get a clear message from this body that, like the Common Council, we understand the watershed moment that we're at in this country with regard to forces of hate seeking to polarize us against each other. And at this moment, if we would send a message of how important it is to unite around a issue that is clearly about social justice, an issue that is about economic development, an issue that is also about human rights. I can't think of an issue that has the potential, although it's a complex issue, admittedly, to unite us more. And I'd like to just admit right here, yes, I've been extremely consistent in asking that people adhere to a process to the point of fault. And I admit that, and I apologize for that. And if that helps anyone here to decide that for that admission, they might be willing to support this tonight. The reason I'm asking is because I may have many faults. One of them is loyalty and friendship. And when Leslie brought this to me, knowing a little bit about her struggle, as I do, and as I believe many of you do, I understood the importance of this, not just to Leslie personally, but to the immigrants community here, to the social justice community, to the progressive community here. There will be a rally on May 1st, and it would be great if the Tompkins County Legislature would take this opportunity to weigh in now rather than delay the vote. And I ask my colleagues, because of that, to vote no on sending it to committee and to give your colleagues the opportunity to vote on this tonight and send a message to the people of Tompkins County that you support immigration reform and that you support it sooner rather than later. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Now, I've written down the people who, the order of folks speaking who had their hands up for the main motion. I'm going to go Leslie, Frank, Nathan, but first, let me start another list.
Brian.
No.
But first I want to say, I appreciate your comments, Kathy. I want to say I feel that there's absolute, I will say, I feel there's absolutely nothing personal at all about the idea of sending this to committee. That this is, I appreciate your concern, but I think this is a genuine concern because a number of people had questions about the content here. It would have been helpful if we'd had more time to talk about it. So I just want to mention that. I also want to say that we don't, and I've checked the rules, and I checked with the expert, Kathy Covert. There are no criteria laid out in our rules about who can bring a resolution, a member filed, and when and about what. And Leslie found out what the deadline was, and that's the criterion, is to get it in by the deadline. So in terms of respecting each other and respecting process, I mean, those are things we need to all balance, and knowing that there's a rally where there is a deadline is certainly a consideration here. So that was my editorial comment. Then Leslie and Frank and Nathan and Carol.
This is about sending it to committee.
We're still on sending it to committee.
I appreciate your comments, Mike, and in a late email to all my colleagues, I did say that. However, I feel that if we want to have a debate on whether things go to committee or not, then we need to think about changing the rules. As Martha indicated, thank you for talking about it, and I would beg you all that to not make this the place where we start to change the rules, this resolution, the place where we begin to change the rules, but we should really visit the rules as they are written there and go from that point at a later date. Throughout this year, we've had a number of member-filed resolutions that have come before us, and I don't remember any discussions around sending them back to committee. Not that I'm tit for tatting, but I would hope that this would not be the place that we think it's necessary for us to now start implementing rule change. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. All right. I have Frank, then Nathan, Carol, Dooley, Mike, and Peter. Did I miss it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, Kathy's leaving the room for a moment. I also want to assure Kathy that there's, as far as I'm concerned, and I don't think there's any member of the legislature, at least I'd like to believe it, that has a personal concern about this. You might have a concern about the content, but I don't think I'm reading anybody having a personal concern or payback, as it was said, for some something that some of us perhaps are not privy to. I do want to say the wording is incorrect. We're not sending it back to committee. We are sending it to committee. Pardon me?
I stand corrected.
No, it wasn't intended to be a correction of you, Mike. It was simply something Leslin said. I want to make sure that we understand that we have the privilege of sending an item to a committee when it comes to us, and mm-hmm. I think that's why I supported Mike's motion, that I think it's appropriate to do this. There's a lot of material in here. It's 2 pages long. It also includes a reference to the Comprehensive Immigration Reform of America's Security and Prosperity Act of 2009. I don't know how many of you have read that. I certainly have not. And I think if it's appropriate, depending upon if it is referred to a committee, it might be an appropriate time to do that. But I do want to say something about immigration. My grandparents on both...
I'm sorry. Let's keep it right now, the discussion of whether to send it to committee. So I'll put you on the list for the main body of the motion. Okay, there are a lot of people waiting. Okay?
Sure.
Okay. Nathan?
Yeah, I want to reiterate that point, that's what this part of the discussion is for. And also, I think that, I mean, before when I first saw this resolution, I had the same concerns that Mike had about it not going to committee. However, now that I've learned the circumstances of the fact that there is a deadline, there's a community gathering on May 1st about this, and also because there, Leslin has and others have worked on emails that have been sent to all of us about improving the language of this resolution, I'm fine with it coming up right now. I think that member-filed resolutions come up for different reasons, and if you can have good justifications, which I think these are, then it's fine. And I think we should just vote and not belabor the subject too much.
I have Carol, then Dooley, then Mike and Peter.
I appreciate the May 1st deadline. May 1st has become an important date in the discussion every year now about immigration. Yep. And I appreciate this coming to us, according to our procedure, a week in advance in our packets. It didn't come to us tonight. It came a week in advance, and I have taken advantage of the opportunity to research this some. It isn't the perfect bill. If it came to my committee, I would work on it. But I don't see that we have a natural committee, that it would have made sense to bring this to in any case. Immigration, it's not our issue. We don't...
Is this about sending it to committee or voting tonight?
Yes, I'm in favor of just doing it tonight because I appreciate it came to us a week in advance, and I don't see a natural committee, and because I believe that it's not a new issue, and it's a national issue, and we have sentiment in this body to not spend a lot of time on these national issues. So sending it to committee means we will make time on a committee agenda and then again here. And I think we pretty much all know where we stand on this issue at this point, and so I'm in favor of just a brief discussion if we have one here tonight or even just voting on it. And so I will not support sending it anyway.
Thank you, Carol. Brian, you had your hand up. I think I had it down for the main motion. Did you want to be in the queue for this discussion?
No.
Okay, thank you. Dooley.
Yes, I sent around an email today when I finally saw that there were emails going around, which I don't get a chance to read usually during the day, saying that I thought that there will be other occasions, gatherings, times during the summer on this same subject, so that if this resolution went to committee, no harm would be done, and in fact it would give a second opportunity for coverage of a local legislative body for taking action on the same topic. Now that I have seen the revisions, I think all of the revisions have improved this resolution. I still disagree with the idea that there should be any reference to Mr. Ortiz's, I'm addressing the topic, Martha.
Okay.
I don't think there should.
You'll be challenged as I was if you don't.
I don't think that there should be a reference to either Mr. Ortiz's bill, which I've not seen, that could maybe be a good bill. I don't know. And the fact that Senator Schumer may introduce something is not relevant to me at all. The idea of what good immigration reform is varies with whichever elected official in Washington you talk to. So I haven't seen a good bill yet. Nevertheless, I am prepared to not send this to committee and vote on it tonight because I don't want to have any of my colleagues feel offended by having it sent to committee, even though I think it's a very reasonable thing to do.
Thank you, Billy. Mike and then Peter.
Two things. One, I certainly want to disassociate myself from Kathy's comments that anything here is directed to her personally. Right. That's not the way we do things at this legislature in all the years I've been here, and it's not being done now. And I think my position here has to do with process and process only. Secondly, what you commented, Martha, about the right to of any of us to add a member filed resolution, we always have that right, but that doesn't change the Roberts Rules of Order, and this is a very common practice under the Roberts Rules of Order to refer new matter to committee.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Peter?
I am second to none in my support of following procedures independent of whether you agree or disagree with the content. Unfortunately, I have no idea what the general rule of procedure is in this body on this matter. Mike, it certainly is a common rule to send things to, refer things to committee, and you can do it for any number of reasons, but what I'm struggling with is is there a precedent for not considering such items without having it go to a committee or not?
Oh, yes.
Yes, we've done it.
I mean, is it written in the rules or what?
All right. These are the rules, February 2010, thanks to Dooley and Frank and Mike Hattery. Newly revised rules, page 7. Individual member filed resolutions. I can read it because it's
yes,
so brief.
Yes, if you would, please, yes.
Any individual member shall introduce any motion or resolution. Well, this is talking about the stage in the agenda. Any individual member shall introduce any motion or resolution at this point by reading the title. Such resolution may be jointly submitted and sponsored by more than one legislator. And I looked everywhere out throughout. There's nothing else anywhere where it says what the criteria are, if there are whether there are criteria about. It has to go through a committee first, or recommended to go through a committee first, or what the topic may be. There's nothing I know of written in the rules. Now I see Jonathan has his hand up, so maybe I should have checked with Jonathan.
But. Well, there is on page 8 a list of particular motions to be made while a motion is pending, and one of them is to refer to committee.
Oh right, right.
Okay.
That's right. I'm talking about whether. The member are there criteria for a member filed resolution? It obviously is something that.
Right, but I think that's what Peter may have been talking about.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the last colloquy.
No, I was saying that on page 8 of the rules, one of the rules is that while a resolution is pending, you can make a motion to refer it to committee.
Oh, yes, I understand that.
Okay.
Yes. But other than that, there is no rule that says that member filed motion should first go to a committee. Is that correct?
No, that's right.
Correct.
That's right.
Okay,
and you. You know, I had Pam next, and then Jim.
Well, I would like to say that I am going to vote against sending this to committee. I think that we should just move ahead with it. I do think that if it doesn't go to committee, that there would be some more happier support for this if the last whereas was just eliminated.
Thank you. Jim and then Will.
I'm not going to support Mike's resolution. I think he's very legitimate in making it. What troubles me most of all, Peter asked the question Was there any precedent? And, you know, we're the poster children for having resolutions come in and voting on them. Mike Hattery used to object to it every night he was here because there was almost a resolution every night he was here. What troubles me most of all about the discussion is when something becomes personal very quickly, we all kind of lose from that. And it's happened before, and I'm not very happy about that.
Well.
Thank you, Martha. I was inclined to think it would be a good idea to send it to committee, and Mike, thank you for making the suggestion, mainly because I didn't fully understand, as best one could fully understand, what we were attempting to do, specifically the references to the Ortiz-Gutierrez bill that was introduced in the House and the proposed legislation that Senator Schumer may be bringing forth. The general principles I felt, you know, I could vote on tonight, and I guess I would agree with Pam's that after we have this vote as to whether to send to the committee, maybe we should consider just removing the specific reference to that bill, which is actually close to 700 pages, and I dare say probably nobody in this room has read. So.
Are there any other comments on whether to vote tonight or whether to send it to committee? I would just like to say that, first, I'd love it if everybody were in the room. I was initially thinking this should go to committee because I didn't understand the need for a deadline, or that there was a specific event coming up. And I was worried about wordsmithing it on the floor. I think the wordsmithing's been handled. Pat and Carol, thank you for your comments, and Leslie for connecting with everybody about the comments. So, I would say that perhaps the GO committee should look at that rule and consider expanding if there's something that we would like to add to that rule. In any case, I do think that respecting each other is probably the most important rule here, and so I hope we'll vote on this tonight. Anything else? Are we ready to vote? So the motion is to send this to committee, and if it matters, I can tell you what committee. I think that we'll vote on sending this to committee first. All in favor of sending it to committee, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3. All opposed to that? Dave, your hand was up? Okay, that's four. All opposed? Please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I get that right? Okay, so we're back to the main motion. Now, where we left off, I had Dooley, Carol, Brian, Leslin, and Frank. Okay? All right, Dooley.
I would move to amend this to remove the last whereas that refers to a lengthy bill that I certainly am not familiar with, and a reference to Senator Schumer's possible future actions.
Is there a second for that amendment? Will?
What was the amendment, Madam Chair?
To remove the last whereas.
Okay. Thank you.
Correct, Dooley? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. It's been seconded by Will. Any discussion? Carol? Leslie? Kathy?
Can you just give an explanation of your reasoning for wanting to have that whereas removed from the resolution?
I gave it while you were out of the room. I'll try to remember what I said.
I appreciate it.
A reference to the Ortiz bill, which was not provided as part of this packet, and with which I'm not familiar. I'm uncomfortable characterizing it as being a significant step because I don't know that. And the added reference to something that Senator Schumer may do, I don't find useful in this context at all. There are a number of elected officials in Washington who may do something on this subject, and I don't see any reason to reference any of this.
Any other discussion on that part? Leslie?
Well, I'm hoping that leaving the language about the bill in there is not going to lose people's votes, because it is real.
We may not have read all 700 and something pages of it, but there are parts of it from now. We bring, I'm not just trying to split hairs here. We bring resolutions all the time with bill numbers attached to it that half of us have not read, seen, don't know anything about, but we know that there's a bill. And we've been fully supportive of those things. The language about Senator Schumer was added by one of my colleagues who thought that it was important to make note of that. I couldn't care less about that language. It can go, but I think, or we can take out all the language about the significant step. But the bill that's been introduced in the House is real. It's there. It exists. And I think that to just reference that there is something already out there. We're not just asking for comprehensive immigration reform just because. You know, it's something that's already been introduced. It's there. It's a living, breathing document. But I'm more than happy to take out everything from and on to, or end that whereas at Texas.
I'm sorry.
May I
take out?
I'm happy to just end it at Texas. If okay. If my colleague who introduced the language around Senator Schumer doesn't mind that.
So let's try this out and see if we have a friendly amendment. If that, Julie, would that be acceptable to leave it in?
No.
Up to okay.
No, that's what I wanted to speak about.
Okay. Okay. Any other comment on the amendment to remove this whereas? Carol?
The addition was mine, and I certainly have no objection to taking out the underlying part that was my addition.
Okay. So is that friendly, Kat, to Leslin, to the mover and seconder?
Yeah.
Okay. Kathy, is that friendly?
I'm just wondering, since what Carol said was the underlined part, is that what we're offering, or are we leaving in the significant step, or since Dooley didn't like it, are we taking that out?
I think we're doing this one step at a time. Because if we can have a friendly amendment here, then that may take care of a little part of it. So the proposal, Carol offered the Senator Schumer part. And
is this an amendment to my amendment? Is that what's going on now?
I guess
so. I was offering an amendment to amend that where I don't know what it is, but to leave it in up until Texas.
And take anything out after Texas.
Yes.
I said it's not. I don't accept that as friendly, right. So it's an amendment
okay.
that you're right. making.
Okay. Carol is trying for a friendly. Leslie made a suggestion. Carol's trying for a friendly amendment that deals with part of this whereas. So I'm trying to find out if that's okay with Leslin and with
it is.
Kathy.
Point of order.
My amendment is on the floor. It was seconded. And you can't have a substitute. You can amend my amendment, but you can't say, let's try a different amendment.
Then let's say, then it would be appropriate for Carol to move this as an amendment to the amendment?
If that's what she thought she was doing.
No, I was really suggesting that we try to take it in stages. I'm not sure yet how I feel about your amendment.
Do you want to have this conversation out in the hall?
Yeah. All right. Let us stay with the discussion of removing this whereas. That's what's on the floor.
Thank you.
Okay.
I wanted to respond to what Leslin said about what I had said.
Okay. Julie, then Pam.
I do not believe when I take the trouble to bring a member filed resolution dealing with other than local issues, that I would do so without either providing a copy of the legislation referenced in the office, or if it's very short, just sending it out or asking it to be put in everyone's boxes. So the precedent that you mentioned, that we do this all the time, we vote on resolutions that some members haven't read, or some that reference some legislative bills that some members haven't read, is, I believe, their choice for not having read them. And that's not this case here. I if you feel strongly about this bill, I'm surprised that it didn't say, and we support this bill. It didn't. It just says it's good and it's significant. And I can't, in good conscience, say vote for that because I don't know that. That's why I'm asking to remove it.
Pam.
I would like to make an amendment to Dooley's amendment. I would like to move that we leave the first sentence up to Texas there, and we remove the rest of it.
Is there a second to that amendment of the amendment? That was seconded by Leslie. Okay, everybody got that? So the last whereas ends with the word Texas. Correct, Pam?
Yes.
Okay. Any discussion of that? Will.
As the seconder of the original Dooley's amendment, if I recall correctly, I would find this acceptable because it's non-evaluative. We're not okay. saying anything other than this exists and this grounds it in a larger legislation. So I will support that.
Pam?
I would also like to point out that I think that Dooley, I don't doubt Dooley's comment that if she were introducing a resolution that she would in fact give us the supporting documents. But Dooley is unusual in these things, and I know that I have seen any number of resolutions that have come through this legislature, some of them to do with hydrofracking and drilling and gas drilling and just on a whole slew of issues. That we have referenced those bills and we have not provided them. And so I think that that particularly because we've done what Will was just described, I think that I would find this acceptable.
Peter? All right, anyone else? Ready to vote on the amendment to the amendment?
Can you read the amendment?
The amendment to the amendment is to remove and is a significant step all the way to United States Senate. That's to most of these two lines here. So the last whereas ends with Solomon P. Ortiz from Texas. All in favor of the amendment to the amendment, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Any opposed? That passes 14-1. That means that now the amendment on the floor is. That's the amendment on the floor. Okay. So all. There we go.
Yes, you have to do it.
This is. So now we are voting to accept this into the resolution as we've just voted. Understood?
No. Mm-hmm.
So what are we voting for?
We're voting to include Pam's amendment. We just amended Dooley's amendment.
So we're voting to take out this whereas now.
So now you have to vote on it as the amendment.
That's good. Dooley's was to take out the whole thing. So now what's left is whereas down to Texas.
No.
Point of information.
Yes. Kathy says I'm right. All right. Point of Pat.
Could the original motion be read, please?
The original motion was to remove the whole whereas.
The whole paragraph.
That whole paragraph. That's okay. Right.
So now we would be voting on whether or not we want to remove the whole thing.
Now we're voting on whether to remove whereas down to Texas.
The original motion has been substituted by Pam's.
Right.
So if
we vote yes, we would take out what we just did.
If we vote yes on this, we take out that the rest of the whereas.
Right.
Peter. No?
Yes. No.
Peter?
Yes.
I'm calling Peter for starters. Let's do that.
I've done this a lot, okay? And it would have been a whole lot quicker if you just followed Robert's rules.
Use your microphone, Peter, please.
Namely, that there was originally a motion by Dooley to take out that whole whereas. Then there was someone who wanted to take out the second half but leave the first half in there, so they wanted to have an opportunity to vote against Dooley's motion to take out the first half as well. So they won. They got the second half out. And now the motion on the floor is still Dooley's motion amended, namely the second half isn't in there anymore. And now you'll have an up or down vote as to whether to take out the rest of it.
Correct.
And that's what we should do at this point.
That's right. So,
yes, we'll take it out.
So if this motion fails, what remains is where's a bill down to Salomon Ortiz from Texas?
Right.
Yes.
If this motion succeeds, that goes away.
The whole thing goes away.
The whole thing goes away. Okay. Everybody got it?
Yep. No. So can you just say if we vote yes, what happens, and if we vote no, what happens?
All right. If we vote yes, the whole whereas goes away.
Okay.
No.
I thought it was the opposite.
Yeah, the motion is to withdraw. Is to withdraw.
Got it.
The shorter version is now the one you're voting on, and you want, if you want what Leslin and Carol supported, then you'll vote yes.
No.
It's not a vote on the whole whereas anymore. It's a vote on the shorter version of the whereas.
Right, because it was amended.
Jonathan?
I agree with what Dooley says.
Yes.
But, I mean, it really doesn't matter, because one way or the other, which whether you vote on it or the positive or the negative, it really ends up
right.
The same thing.
Right, we just have double negatives here. So explain again, then, what your interpretation is.
It really... Again, it doesn't matter whether you do it one way or the other, but the way I think you should do is that you should vote now, and the vote should be a yes would mean that it goes up to Texas, and a no would mean that that it's as it was.
I got it. It's the third time I got
That's
it.
Right.
I got
it.
Yes.
That's right.
But we already voted on taking
I thought we just voted on that. That was Pam's motion. And we voted 14 to 1.
Ready.
The amendment on the floor.
Right.
The first vote was to vote on the amendment to the amendment. Now you're voting on the amendment.
Right. Okay, Jonathan, tell us one more time, and if that's okay, as long as everybody understands which way we're voting.
So, we'll now have a vote on the amendment as it was amended. And if that passes, the answer is yes, which frankly it looks like that's what's going to happen, then whereas it will read up to Texas and go from Texas to now therefore be it. Okay?
Yes.
So why don't we just vote on that? It's pretty clear what that vote's going to be, and that will eliminate any problem.
Okay. Before anybody forgets. Okay.
Sorry.
Don't ask any questions.
Okay. Yes, Carol.
I don't know which way to vote.
A yes vote.
I'd like to call a question.
I would like to have some discussion on whether to keep in.
Excuse me, the question has been called. There's no. You can.
Well,
point of order. No one can just blame call the question.
Sure, you're right.
Carol was talking.
And then voted on.
All right. Excuse me, everybody. Jonathan has just explained it twice. Let us do it one more time. Please listen carefully. A yes vote will leave in, whereas a bill, the Comprehensive Immigration Reform for American Security and Prosperity Act of 2009, down to from Texas, a yes vote will leave that in the main resolution.
Right. And that's likely to happen. A no vote would just leave it as it is, because there'd be an amendment on the floor and it would not have been approved.
A no vote would
leave
the
it
entire
exactly as it is.
Whereas back
as
in the resolution.
In the
yes.
Carol?
I would appreciate some discussion, maybe one speaker pro and con for leaving this in versus...
Well, actually, no. That question has been called. So all in favor of any debate on this particular piece of this, I'll vote in favor of calling the question. Raise your hand. That means debate is over on this. Raise your hand if you're in favor of calling the question. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Opposed to calling the question. 1, 2, 3, 4, 11 to 4. Now we are, the question has been called. It is time to vote on what Jonathan and I agree with the ruling. Whereas a bill down to from Texas. A yes vote.
The information.
Yes.
I don't understand how a vote, how it can be the way Jonathan said when the original motion was to delete this whereas. Aren't we voting to delete the whereas? That was the original motion.
Pat, it was amended. Pam amended that motion.
But it was amended to take out part of it.
To take out part of it.
Right, but
and
still.
And that vote passed. There was a vote taken and that passed. That becomes the amendment on the table now for a second vote.
Which it was moved that we delete. Aren't we moving now?
That voting? Was the first amendment, and then that amendment was amended.
Yes, I know.
So a yes vote, the vote is now whether to leave in or take out what is remaining. Is that correct, Jonathan?
Right.
Pat, if Pam's motion had failed, Dooley's amendment would have been back on the table. But because Pam's motion passed, her motion became the amendment on the table.
So the vote now is whether the amended whereas stays in or goes away. A yes vote removes the amended whereas.
No. That's what I said.
Point of order.
That's exactly what I said.
Point of order.
All right, Peter.
In
Pam.
Procedures, this is not the way it should be handled out. The chair should make a ruling on what the vote means. If people want to challenge the ruling of the chair, then they can do so and it turns around. People should not be discussing back and forth what it is. So I wish you would state what a yes vote means, what a no vote means, and not recognize anybody to discuss that except to challenge your ruling and ask for a vote to have the body adopt something else.
Agreed. I will just ask Jonathan one more time. A yes vote is
okay.
To state that, please, clearly.
I will state. A yes vote means that the whereas stays in the resolution. Only it goes from the word Texas to now therefore be it, and everything between Texas and now for therefore be it is out. A no vote means that the resolution will be exactly as it appears on the paper.
Okay. Because in effect you could do one or the other. That's my ruling. So all in favor of the amendment, which is, as Jonathan stated, please raise your hand.
All right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. All opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4. Peter, I couldn't see your hand. Did you vote?
Who, me?
Peter.
I didn't understand, so I just assumed not vote on this.
That's counted as a no.
All right, I'll vote with the majority then if I have to vote.
Okay, then that was 11 to 4. The amendment, the motion is amended. We are now on to the main motion.
So what does it read now?
It reads, whereas a bill, the Comprehensive Immigration Reform for America's Security and Prosperity Act of 2009, H.R. 4321, was introduced to the House of Representatives on December 15, 2009 by Representative Solomon P. Ortiz from Texas. Now, therefore, be it resolved.
Okay.
Now we're back to the main motion. I'm going to start over again with a list because I'm sure whoever was in the queue before has forgotten where they were. Frank.
Thank you. May I speak now?
Yes, Frank.
Thanks.
Thank you for your patience.
You bet. It's difficult for me not to support this resolution because my grandparents on both sides of my family came from Italy on a boat. Both were on boats as the means of transportation, as Mike was describing. My wife was a Canadian, and my stepchildren were both Canadian. And we went through the immigration process with them. I did. which took quite some time, and got them naturalized. I respect what Kathy and what Lesson are trying to accomplish here with this resolution, but I think that as Mike did try to get it referred to committee, I think it would be important for more discussion. We have been on this for the better part of an hour, or probably a little longer than an hour, and it's been amended. I suspect it would even be discussed with a lot of intensity at any committee that it was referred to. I'm sorry that there's a deadline on this, May 1st, I believe, but some of us have some pretty strong feelings about some of the language in this resolution, including the lack of information on the HR bill that's being referred to. So with reluctance, please don't misunderstand my no vote, sir. I'm perfectly in support of anyone who's here legally and will do what they can. I, for one, as somebody involved in agriculture, respect anyone who's participating in farming, whether they own the farm or they're a worker on it. And it's difficult for me not to support this, but I'm afraid that I will have to not support this resolution. Please don't misread that as a slight towards any particular nationality or group of individuals.
Jim?
I'm going to support the resolution, but I think the last hour made the case that Mike's motion should have been followed when he put it forth, and I'm sorry that I voted against it at the time, because had I known it would have gone on like this, I certainly would.
Anybody else? Are we ready to vote? Brian.
Look, I thought we were on the list.
Sure. I thought the list kind of got blown up, but okay. So go ahead.
Thanks. I had actually made some notes a couple of days ago and again today, and through all this, the scorecard kind of got jumbled up, so I'm sorry. First off, Leslie and Kathy, thank you for bringing this here. Obviously, it's a passionate issue, not only for you folks, but the whole country at this point. And it's been debated and will continue to be debated for a long time. My notes read first thing that what happened to the committee structure, and I think we saw over the last hour. Why I wrote that down. As far as the deadline, to me, it's not tied to any funding or anything. It's symbolic, and I don't know why that would pertain in here. I'm not clear at all as to what the reform is, and we had a lot of discussion over. A future bill to be introduced to the Senate. I'm sure that there's going to be. I have no idea what that's going to look like, so I have a hard time supporting something that you just don't know. And my last point, and this probably isn't going to surprise you, but we're dealing with a multi-million dollar shortfall right here in Tompkins County. That's a local issue for sure. And this is obviously a national issue, and we've spent a lot of time already dealing with something that, let's face it, we don't have any control over this per se as a body, and it's because of those things, not about the issue. My views on the issue don't pertain to this discussion, but I've just outlined why I can't support this resolution.
Anyone else? Ready to vote? All in favor of the amended resolution, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. All opposed? 1, 2, 3. It passes 12-3.
Thank you
all for your forbearance on this one. Yes, Brian.
just want to say thank you.
I was going to say, can we take a little break?
I was going to say we're going to take a 10-minute break, yes.
Can I just say thank you to everybody? I don't know that you all realize how much this means to me. So I really appreciate your votes.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Let's really be back in your seats at 8:15. Thank you.